Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the Dan O'Bannon classic Return of the Living Dead, 1985. One of my favorites from my childhood.
Yeah, a movie somehow I have seen way more times than I remember, because I knew a lot of it.
Yeah, this is a classic of the genre. I mean, we're going to talk in a couple weeks about Night of the Living Dead, which is a completely different style of movie. But I think a lot of what came after came actually from this movie.
Yeah, that was what really surprised me.
And I think it knows what kind of movie it is. It's like a horror comedy.
It definitely does.
And I don't know. I mean, spoiler, I think this movie is better than it has to be. For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie was invented for renting on VHS or showing on late night cable.
Mm-hmm.
So now, how old were you in 1985?
For most of the year, I was 8.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Well, fair enough. We probably didn't see it till 1986 anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, a good 9. Be great. My daughter's age. Yeah. So, what did you think of watching it this time? What are your memories, and what do you think about this time?
The things that had really stuck with me since I was little was the half dogs.
Yes.
That really stuck with me. And I was surprised that it was just a tiny bit of this movie. I remembered it being more. Strangely, the weird naked cemetery dance did not stick with me. Maybe because I was only 9 and not yet like 11. The whole brains thing. I assume this is the genesis of that.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, this movie does wild things with the zombie mythology. I mean, they're clever, they're sentient, they can talk.
Yep, they're fast when they have mobility.
Mm-hmm.
They can seemingly not ever be killed.
Yeah, the blows to the head don't do anything.
Yeah, cutting them into pieces doesn't seem to do anything.
This is wild.
This is groundbreaking stuff. This is the prelude to World War Z. This is part of the foundational text. This is like a Dead Sea Scroll kind of situation.
An oddly diverse cast for 1985.
You mean like racially diverse?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it had a black guy.
It did, indeed. And he wasn't reduced to, I'm gonna go and get you, sucker.
No. Well, I mean, a little bit.
Well, I mean, considering all the over-the-top characters.
And he didn't die, right? Until the very end?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if that was like an homage to Night of the Living Dead, but...
I don't know. It's hard to say. You know, this movie has a lot of stories behind it, and I don't know what's true or not. And I know that our fans love when we just read off of IMDb or Wikipedia. So I tried to dig a little further than that, but, you know, it's hard.
None of it's true.
Oh, that's the thing.
I don't care what they say. None of it is true.
Did you enjoy it this time?
I did.
I'm so happy. I mean, I guess we could have had a fiercer conversation if you didn't like it, if you hated it. But I think even Jason would like this movie.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is, it's really light on the horror elements. And it is super, super campy.
Yeah, it is. It is full camp, but it's light on the horror elements, but it is actually pretty good in the special effects. The practical effects are great. I love the tar guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He is fantastic.
Yeah, the cadaver dude was probably the worst.
Yes. Yes.
But,
Well, and you know, you can kind of see the seams, you know, when you get to stuff like the half dogs. But again, all you need is a little flash of that in the sound. Really, it's just the sound of the half dogs that makes it creepy.
Yeah, I mean, that stuck with me for my entire life.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much. Now, did we also watch Return of the Living Dead Part 2?
Yeah, we must have. And Part 3.
Part 3 came out, like, way later, like in the 90s, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
But, I mean, like, you and me, like, in the rec room.
Yes, I'm sure we did. Return
of the Living Dead Part
2. Yep. I have part two and three for you. Although, I think I watched part two recently, and it's a lot, like, it's a lot slower paced. Not as fun.
All right, so this is definitely the one I remember then.
I'm sure there are parts of the other one you remember. But yeah, this is again, this is the...
Did part two have half dogs?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then no.
Okay.
No.
I love the whole conceit of this movie. The conceit of this movie is the events in the 1968 Night of the Living Dead were true, but, you know, the government covered it up. So it wasn't exactly true, but like with a wink and a nod. So that's this whole thing. You start out in Louisville, Kentucky on the 3rd of July, 1984 at 1730 hours Eastern Daylight Time.
Oh, yeah. Before that, there's a little title card that says everything in this movie is true.
Yes, all the names are true. Yes, exactly.
It's not a coincidence. All the places are true. Yeah.
I love
it. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. And that tells you, right? I mean, that and the fact that you go to the medical supply company, UNITA. You need it, we got it. And it's a medical supply company, so it's fun. They have stuff like skeletons with perfect teeth. And half dogs, and actually human corpses.
Yes, just one.
Yeah, well, one because they haven't got a shipment. It's the holiday. So we have a new employee.
Another thing, if you recognize, tells you everything you need to know about this movie. Two of the main leads' characters' names are Bert and Ernie.
Yes. Which Dan O'Bannon says was not intentional.
There's no way that's not intentional.
Well... You realize that one of the two, they're not leads, but two of the relatively main characters in It's a Wonderful Life are named Bert and Ernie.
I've never seen that movie.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's worth seeing. We should put it on the calendar for Christmas.
All right.
I've also got The Ref coming from the library, so we'll be able to watch that too. I love the library. I've been to the library like every 2 or 3 days since I got my library card.
Nice.
Back to Louisville, Kentucky. We meet... the brand new employee, Freddy, who is played by Tom Matthews from Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. I think he plays Tommy Jarvis, the teenage Tommy Jarvis. And his co-worker, Frank, played by James Karen from Mulholland Drive, 13 Days, Nixon, Congo, Wall Street, The China Syndrome, Capricorn One, and All the President's Men. And Frank is going to show Freddy the ropes.
Yeah, Frank and Bert were the two most recognizable actors. I don't know where Bert was from. But.
Bert is played by Clu Gulager. His name is Clu, C-L-U, so I don't know what that's short for. Clu Torres.
Cluggard.
Yeah, there you go. He's from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge, and The Last Picture Show.
Wow.
Yeah, he also apparently had kind of a temper. So they actually, instead of the lead pipe, they actually had a metal pipe to use as a prop, but they actually found a rubber pipe because they were afraid he was going to actually brain somebody with the metal one.
Yikes.
Yeah. So again, I don't know if that's...
So he was in the recent Tarantino movie?
Yes.
Is that because he was in The Last Picture Show?
I don't know, maybe. But yeah, so the boss is Bert. And the boss is leaving for the day, the weekend, I guess, the holiday. Frank shows Freddy around. By the way, Freddy turns out has a lot of punk rock friends. Freddy is not super punk rock, although I guess he's a little bit. His girlfriend is not punk rock at all. She's like a Valley Mall girl.
Yeah, well, they had a very diverse set of friends. Everybody was like a specific cliche.
Yes.
And it ranged from the death metal dude all the way to the skinny tie wearing punk.
Yes.
Like preppy punk guy.
Yeah. Yeah, like the Knack kind of punk. Maybe even new wave.
Yeah.
And everything is over the top in this movie. All the acting is over the top, but I think they did a good... Everybody treated it seriously, though. They didn't take the movie seriously, obviously, but everybody seems to be giving it their all.
Yep, there's a character named Suicide who had a safety pin in his mouth connected to a chain that went to his ear, who ended up having a soliloquy about how he's misunderstood.
Oh, yeah.
While he's talking to the naked chick.
Yeah. Whose name is Trash, and we'll get to her in a second in detail. And by the way, when they were shooting this movie, they expected it to be played on TV at some time. Like, there's one of the punk rock guys who's got a jacket, and on the back of the jacket says, like, fuck off or fuck you in the Coca-Cola logo. But they shot another scene with a similar...
Freddy?
Oh, maybe, yeah. And they had a similar jacket that they shot that actually just says the words television version on the back of it.
Which is pretty
fun, yeah. So they're just kind of looking around the warehouse, and he shows the half dogs, and he shows there's a human corpse in the freezer. And, you know, Frank is an old guy who likes to tell stories. In some ways, I am Frank, I'm afraid.
We are all Frank as we get older.
Yeah, maybe that's right. I don't ever want to be Bert. And I'm sure I was Freddy at some point. So we've got all the whole talk about, you know, showing the half dogs and the prosthetics and whatnot. And then Freddy asks what the weirdest thing Frank has ever had in the warehouse. And so he tells this story of how the army sent some barrels to them by accident that came out of the Night of the Living Dead real scene. This chemical, 2,4,5 trioxin.
This whole scene, Frank specifically, is great.
Oh, Frank is a wonderful storyteller.
Yeah, and he does so much heavy... I mean, it's all exposition, right? But it doesn't feel like it, because we are, in that moment, we are Freddy.
Yes.
We are just listening to Frank, like with this look on our face. It's like, tell me more.
Yeah.
He's so captivating when he's telling it. And it's so weird. And it's so creepy. And it's such a great setup. This scene is better than it deserves to be.
I could see an entire like stage play of just the UNITA set.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys having a conversation.
Absolutely.
So we have the whole story about how the chemical company, Darrow, lost control of the substance, blah, blah, blah. And some of these things get shipped to UNITA instead. And they've been sitting in the basement the whole time. Because what are you going to do with them, right?
None of that story makes any sense, but it is somehow all extremely plausible.
Yeah, it just sets you up for the rest of the movie.
And the entire time, you think Frank is just bullshitting.
Exactly.
Like he's spinning a yarn.
Yes.
Until he takes Freddy down to the basement to show him.
Exactly. And then they end up, accidentally bumping the...
Yeah, Frank bangs on it to show Freddy how sturdy they are and how these canisters don't leak.
Yes, and so it sprays this gas at them, rendering them unconscious. And immediately, pinboard full of butterflies and the half dogs and stuff start to animate.
Yeah, 1985. This is like peak, like chemical fear time, right?
It's
Toxic Avenger, industrial sludge.
Sure. And when was I think the Bhopal accident was later, but
probably earlier. Yeah. I mean, I'm aware of it. I don't remember it.
Much like Chernobyl. It's like, bad shit happened and lots of people died, but now we don't really know tons about it.
Yeah, Bhopal was in December of 1984.
Oh, okay, so perfect time. So then we go out to California, and we meet up with an Army officer, Colonel Glover, Jonathan Terry, who was in Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, and his wife, Ethel Glover, Kathleen Cordell. And I'm not sure... I guess the whole idea is that somebody is just basically on call to wait to hear about these chemicals when they turn up someplace.
Yes, so they put, what was he, a colonel?
Yes.
They house him in, like, the most ostentatious mansion possible.
Exactly.
For some reason.
Yes, and his wife complains that he's always working or whatever. He's always on call. Mm-hmm. It seems like a loveless marriage.
And he has super fancy communications equipment in his office.
Yes. Then we go back to Louisville and we meet Freddy's friends, including Suicide, who is Mark Venturi from Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning. And he's the guy that is all... He's the central casting punk rocker.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. He could have been given the Vulcan neck pinch by Spock if he was riding a bus in San Francisco. But he's not. Instead, he's driving in his car in Louisville.
I imagine in the mid-80s, Louisville was a hotbed of punk rock.
Well, I think it was supposed to be like Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is kind of an unassuming kind of place. Like it doesn't have the either the mystique or the gravitas of like a Chicago or a New York or an L.A., it's like a middle America kind of place. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, we see Suicide and his friends. And his friends include Linnea Quigley, who we know from Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, and a ton of Scream Queen type characters.
Is she the girlfriend?
No, she's trash.
Oh, that's the actress's name, not yes. The character's
no,
name.
No, I'm sorry, yeah. No, her name is Linnea Quigley. And you go to a horror convention, chances are you can buy an autograph of Linnea Quigley. And I think she got the role because she was willing to be nude. That was just kind of her thing. Hmm. Yeah.
I have not seen Return of the Living Dead Part 3, but based on the cover, I'm assuming it's the same character that comes back.
I don't think so, but well, I don't know. I don't remember. But yes, the cover is... Yeah, the cover is like a combination of Suicide and Trash together.
Mm-hmm. As a zombie.
As a zombie, yes. But everybody is kind of over the top. And especially like Trash, like to give an example of Trash's behavior, like Trash, when she exits the convertible car they're driving, comes up from the passenger front seat. She comes up over the windshield and slides crotch first down the hood. For no reason other than to crab walk crotch first and show that there is a skull painted on the leather cod piece she's wearing.
Yes, it's all ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but fun. So they have to wait for Freddy because they're going to go out partying or whatever. So they're going to just hang out in the cemetery as you do. So they break into the cemetery. Because, you know, it's the 3rd of July after hours and whatnot, apparently.
They bring a boombox and road flares.
Yes.
Because that's how you party in Louisville.
And presumably some sort of alcohol, but there's no real drugs in this movie. Although, these kind of punks would be more like doing airplane glue.
Yeah. I mean, they couldn't afford gas. I can't imagine they could afford booze.
Yeah. So, back at UNITA, Frank and Freddy wake up. And the corpse that was in the canister is gone. But also, they're a little worse for the wear after being sprayed with this chemical. So they go upstairs and see the half-dogs, and they end up seeing the reanimated corpse. And they panic. Like, what the hell? They panic. So Freddy's first thought is, hey, why don't you just call the 800 number on the canister? And Frank is like, no, we can deal with this ourselves.
Yeah, we'll get in trouble.
Exactly. Which, by the way, is, it's maybe a movie cliche, But it's how a lot of real problems get real bad in real life is by people saying, no, 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 we don't have to tell anybody. We can solve this problem ourselves. So instead, they call Bert and they say, Bert, you got to come back down to the office. And did you see the eye chart in the office?
No.
It starts with a B at the top, and I think it reads, Bert is a slave driver and is going bald. Yeah, so.
And Bert has never noticed this.
Probably not. So, we flash to the cemetery, and we see that, you know, we see little groups of people talking. This is, I think, where we get suicide soliloquy.
It's more than just a costume, man.
Exactly. And then we have Trash, who is just, she's just the weirdo chick, certifiable. We've known these people. And she just, she's like, have you ever thought about like the worst way to die? And then she describes it as a bunch of old men eating her. And then she's just getting so worked up or something. She just has to get out of her clothes. So she takes all of her clothes off, except for her boots, I guess, or her shoes rather, and tights. And I mean, it's a great display. Apparently there was, and again, this may be just, I don't believe it trivia, but the first thought when she disrobed and did this thing was that they were going to show her, you know, like completely full frontal, including her natural bush, you know, her pubic hair. Now, if you're listening and you're Jesse's age, you probably don't know what pubic hair is.
I think we know what bush means.
Yeah. Well, no, but not if you're young people. Anyway, so she's like, okay, well, we'll solve that problem. And so they just shaved her. And then they're like, no, that's even worse. So they made her wear like one of those like merkin strips or whatever.
It looked like she was wearing a like flesh tone leotard.
Yeah,
like she looked like a unclothed Barbie doll.
Yeah,
but with boobs.
Exactly, which is all you need in this kind of movie. This isn't a sex movie. This is just a titillation, if you pardon the pun. It is gratuitous, though. Completely unnecessary. Although it does add to, you know, later when it rains, it becomes a problem. So that's, I guess that's one way to illustrate one part of the rain problem. But so back at UNITA, Bert arrives and he is super worried about getting investigated by the government and sued by Darrow Company. And so this is where they open the door and they find that the corpse is animated.
Yeah, Bert seems like somebody who cheats on his taxes.
Yes. And they decide to kill the corpse, the reanimated corpse, and they take a pickaxe and pickaxe him in the head. But that does not kill him, which we alluded to before, which is already the first thing this way kind of subverts your expectations. Mm-hmm. Because everything George Romero has told you is that will solve the problem. The problem is not solved. So instead, they decide to dismember him. I get the impression that Bert has actually, this is not his first dismemberment either. Maybe one time in college, he belonged to a fraternity and something went bad.
Yeah. Bert was all over this.
Yes. But Bert is not as sinister as another character we're going to meet in a little bit here. Ernie, who is the next door neighbor who
when they figure out that the pickaxe of the head doesn't work, and they cut up the corpse. That doesn't work either, because the little pieces parts are still trying to get at them, which is a little disturbing. This is really subverting zombie mythology.
Oh, it is, yes. So they have to package these individual parts in plastic bags, and they take it over to the friendly neighborhood crematorium, Resurrection Funeral Services, which is run by Ernie, played by Don Calfa, from Bugsy, Running Scared, The Star Chamber, and The Rose. Now, let me tell you about Ernie. Something I did not realize. I mean, I knew the individual pieces, but I didn't really put it together. Ernie actually has a backstory. Ernie is an escaped Nazi. Like, he's listening to Nazi music in his Walkman. That's the music he's listening to. He has a Luger on his body. He's got a picture of Eva Braun in his office.
I did not notice that.
I think he actually speaks German at one point, like under his breath.
When he's looking at the rain.
Yes. Yeah. And there's also a scene where when he realizes that corpses can still feel pain, even as he's shoving them into the ovens. He gets this look like, oh my, what have I done? So that's like a little darkness, you feel, but they don't really play it up because it's not that kind of movie, really.
No, it's not.
Instead, you know, he's kind of googly-eyed, too. He's a little bit of the Marty Feldman type character.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this whole Bert and Ernie, and then we've got Freddy and Frank. And Freddy and Frank, by the way, are getting worse. They're actually getting sick. Whatever they inhaled is not doing anything good to them.
Yeah, they look like shit.
Yes.
They're all pale and sweaty and mopey.
Now, when we meet Ernie, by the way, he's in the middle of preparing a body and talks about rigor mortis and how you can break the rigor mortis in the muscles or something.
Oh, yeah. That was the other thing that had stuck with me from a little kid.
Yeah. I don't know if that's real or not, but it's interesting.
It's real to me.
Yes. And at first, they told Ernie that what they had in the bags they needed destroyed were, what, rabid weasels or something?
Yes, that they wanted to burn alive.
Yes. And he's like, oh, no, we can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently the former Nazi thought that was a line too far.
Exactly. Yes. So once Ernie gets attacked by an arm, then he realizes that, okay, we're just going to do this thing. And Bert tells Ernie the whole story. And then, we go back to the punks and it's almost 10 o'clock when Freddy's supposed to get off work and they're waiting for him. And Tina, who is Freddy's girlfriend, decides to go and get him, and they're going to wait in the cemetery. So we have in the crematorium, we have all of the ashes and whatnot and smoke and whatever is coming up through the chimney in a very...
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, they had a nice conversation when they were loading the corpse parts in while they're still wriggling around about how... the heart is the hardest part to burn.
Yes.
And so they'll turn it up higher. And Bert's worried. He wants to make sure the bones go too. So they're going to turn it up even higher. And Frank comments that it looks really simple. You know, it's not rocket science that even he could operate that thing. Which, if Brother Jay were here, he would roll his eyes and comment about how ham-handed the foreshadowing is.
Yes,
and how
yes.
He knew exactly how it was going to end up for Frank. But I want to give this movie credit because this is a movie that does not need foreshadowing.
Oh, exactly, exactly.
But it has it. You know, it's got Frank predicting his death. It's got Trash predicting her death.
Uh-huh. And... Oh, when we get there, Frank's death scene is sad and touching. It's great. So we have the fire from the super hot oven and smoke is coming out. Then it starts to rain.
Acid rain.
Yes. And it's bumming everybody out because it's raining really hard. And also Trash's skin is burning because, of course, she doesn't have any clothes on. So they all go for shelter. And this gang includes... Trash, Suicide, Scuzz, Spider, who, by the way, Spider is Miguel Nunez Jr. He's from Jumping Jack Flash and Friday the 13th, The New Beginning. And then we have
Jumping Jack Flash, Brother Jay's favorite movie.
We're going to see if we can talk about that some episode where maybe you're gone. Unless you want to be there. We're going to have a calendar talk too at some point today, I think.
I would love to be there for that one.
So anyway, and then we have Chuck, played by John Philbin from Tombstone. So they all run to the car, and it's like acid rain, blah, blah, blah. And then we have this smoke that seems to be, or fog or something that's coming from the cemetery, because the acid rain is now seeping into the graveyard. And so we know what's happening is all of the dead who are going to climb out of their graves, which, by the way, is also a good piece of business.
Mm-hmm. It looked great.
Yeah.
Even the camera work of virtual camera going down through the cross section of the soil to follow the rain seeping down.
It's beautiful.
Very, very stylish.
Yeah, absolutely. So back at the crematorium, Ernie's checking that all the parts are dead, and Bert hugs him and tells him he owes him big. But this is where Frank and Freddy are really feeling bad and looking bad. And then Frank throws up, And Bert calls for an ambulance, saying that there are two poisoned patients. So, inside Suicide's car, Trash is still naked, and they hear the moans of the zombies. We have Tina, who arrives at UNITA and finds Freddy's hat and goes down the stairs. And the original corpse, I guess the Tar Man or whatever, goes after Tina's brains. And I thought the Tar Man was great. I love the character. I love the movements.
It was a legitimately good jump scare, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's all good. It's as good. Maybe, I don't know if the face was meant to kind of echo the skull at the top of the stairs of Night of the Living Dead, but it works so well.
Look great. And again, more foreshadowing with the watch the third step.
Exactly. Blah, blah, blah. The goes after Tina's brains. That guy does.
No, wait. We can't yada yada this part. Because Tina locks herself into, like, a storage locker.
Yes.
So the zombie rigs up a winch and wraps a chain around the handle and rigs up a winch to pull the doors off to get her. That was a real oh shit moment.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
These guys are smart. They can use tools. They can think strategically.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's a problem.
Even like the 28 days later fast zombies, which were pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't like setting traps.
Oh no, exactly.
They weren't all like send more cops.
Oh my god, that is the funniest part of this whole thing.
Well, because it works.
Yeah, it does. It's great. It's what would really happen in real life. You know, they plan, our agency has not actually done a zombie simulation, but I know that the CDC does like zombie pandemic training to get more people involved in the process. Because if you're just doing a flu simulation, it's not nearly as exciting as if you're trying to stop a zombie apocalypse. Anyway, we have paramedics that arrive. And things go poorly for the paramedics.
Well, I mean, things don't go poorly at first. They come in and they check out Frank and Freddy and determine that they have no vital signs.
Exactly, yes.
And that they are room temperature.
Yes.
Which really freaks Freddy out.
Yeah, I love when they're like, huh, this maybe my equipment's broken. Like, my blood pressure cuff is broken. Yeah, my thing is weird too. So they just switch people. Like, oh no.
Yeah. Yeah, they thought the stethoscope was broken. A stethoscope.
Yes.
It's not a complicated piece of equipment.
Well.
You thought this was going to be a short podcast.
Yeah, I did. I thought we were going to Kubo this whole thing, but no. Anyway, the gang keeps searching for Freddy. Zombies come out of everywhere. Trash gets left behind and gets eaten by the zombies. Again, predicting her own death. The paramedics realize that Frank and Freddy are dead, although they're still live and kicking. And the rest of the surviving punks end up at Resurrection, which is the name of the crematorium.
Of course it is. That's the name of the cemetery, too.
Yes. So Tina is realizing that Freddy has changed. And Ernie goes out to see why the paramedics are taking so long, and nobody's there, but the ambulance still has the doors open. A zombie is eating one of the brains of the paramedics. And then we have the barricade scene, sort of similar to Night of the Living Dead, where they try to close all the doors and windows and contact the police. One of the zombies then asks for more paramedics. One of the punks gets Bert to tell him what he knows about the chemical. Ernie checks on Freddy, and they realize that rigor mortis is advancing. And then another set of paramedics arrives, and things go very poorly for them very quickly. Scuzz is grabbed by one of the zombies as they're trying to board up a window or a door and gets pulled out and his head bitten off.
Yeah, and when they pull him back, they pull in, they pull in the zombie that's eating him and then cut her in half.
And she gets tied down to a...
Yeah, Ernie gets really excited.
Exactly. they tie her down and end up having a conversation with her. And this is where the exposition comes from a half-dead zombie who explains that the reason they eat brains is because it somehow cures or heals the pain that they feel from being dead.
Mm-hmm. It's very sad, actually.
It is. It is. It's horrifying. Trash becomes a naked zombie.
As was her destiny.
Yes. Let's see. We get more cops. And they start shooting the zombies. There's a helicopter hovering, but they can't really do anything.
In this movie, shooting zombies doesn't do anything.
No. So, Freddy dies and then wants to eat Tina's brain.
Yeah, so they decide... This was smart. They decide to lock Frank and Freddy in the chapel.
Yes.
That's smarter than most people are in a zombie movie. Except for Tina. She decides she's going to hang out with Freddy.
Well, she's going to stand by her man.
Yeah, I suppose that's admirable, but that's real dumb.
Well, yeah.
Oh, and the way Freddy turns was great. Because, like, he's like moaning and complaining about how much it hurts, and she's holding him and trying to soothe him. And then all of a sudden, he's just like, I know, there's only one thing that'll help. And this is, like, sort of the iconic, like, your brain, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
That's great.
It is great.
How did that make it into zombie lore and, like, always be attributed to, like, Romero zombies?
I don't know.
That's so weird. That's like, the Mandela effect, right?
Yeah, maybe.
It's weird.
Let's see. Yada yada. Ernie is injured in his foot.
Wait, you can't yada yada when Freddy's going after Tina and there's a commotion. They open up the chapel to help her. And while they are dealing with Freddy by throwing nitric acid on his face.
Yes.
Frank just kind of slips out,
yeah,
unnoticed.
Exactly. He just sort of disappears.
And what happened to Frank is not what I was expecting.
No, not at all. No, like I said, it goes from this sort of yakety sax with zombies, mm-hmm, to this really touching scene of Frank operating the furnace, the crematorium thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes off his wedding ring. And he slips himself inside with a tear in his rolling down his cheek. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, this weird scene of tragedy in this silly movie.
Well, and I mean, Frank, we already talked about Frank from the whole jump in this movie. Frank is a guy we love.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, his ending is particularly sad because we love him. Like, we don't particularly care about Trash getting killed. We know that's going to happen.
Nope.
And everybody else is just, you know, collateral damage. But we end up, and this is a lot of yada yadaing. We'll see if you reel me back in.
Oh, we need to talk about Freddy's psychological warfare tactics.
Oh, okay. Please do.
Yeah. So we have the tar zombie who is like MacGyvering tools.
Yes.
And then we have Freddy who, when he can't see... but he can smell. He can smell Tina close by. And he really wants her brains. And he doesn't know what to do. He resorts to psychological warfare. He's talking about how much she hurt him. And how she needs to come out because he's so hurt. And he's trying to get at her. And he's trying to get to her so much that he broke his hand off. Like, this is not played for laughs. He's like, he's gaslighting her, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He is trying to, and she is, she's very susceptible to manipulation.
Yes.
And the whole time, he's trying to guilt her into coming down so he can eat her brains.
Mm-hmm.
And it's working.
And at this point, Ernie and Tina have, like, climbed up a ladder and gotten into an attic and mm-hmm. knocked the ladder over and are basically going to hole up in the attic.
Yeah, like braced it
yeah.
from above.
But of course, yeah, Tina is getting, you know, she might blow the whole thing by going down to Freddy.
Yeah.
By this time, the police are setting up barricades outside, and Bert's trying to explain about the zombies, but then all the zombies come. And anyway, as a last resort, Bert then calls the phone number stenciled on the outside of the canister and talk to Colonel Glover, sorry.
Who's very calm.
Oh, yeah. He's been expecting this. Like, he's got a checklist. This is a military thing.
It actually reminded me quite a bit of Peter Sellers in Dr. Strangelove.
A little bit, yes. Also, you know, when I think of of how one would deploy a nuclear weapon. I don't think generally big gun. Like, I know that like in Iraq, they were supposed to be developing these super gun things that were basically like a gigantic cannon. So they can lob a nuclear missile, you know, miles or whatever. But yeah, literally the piece of artillery they used is a World War II howitzer.
Yeah, it just looked like a tank gun.
Yeah. And they bomb Louisville.
Wah, wah.
Yeah.
The cavalry's on its way.
Boom. All the characters we loved, whether they were alive or dead, are now itty bitty. But of course, we already know that if the crematorium just disperses this chemical even further, then a nuclear attack is just going to send this even further in the atmosphere.
Well, I don't know. It gets pretty darn hot.
Well, that's true. But this acid rain problem continues to be a problem. So it's kind of, I mean, it's not an end of the world ending, but it's an end of everybody we like ending.
It's a very nihilistic ending, and it happens just as Freddy is breaking into the attic.
Exactly. So, you know, it's good news, bad news. I guess, well, for Tina and Ernie. It's
kind of bad news, bad news.
Yeah. So,
really?
Yeah. So, I love this movie. I laughed. The whole thing, I mean, like I said, it hits all the levels for me. It's not too serious. It's got some, you know, legitimate like jump scare stuff that I'm not really a jump scare kind of guy. But it's got great special effects. It's got some fun
for dialogue. Its time.
Yeah. For its time. Well, I don't know. Tar Man still is great today.
Yeah. They're practical effects, which is always more fun.
Yeah. I mean, Tar Man would live up to anything they have in Walking Dead. Maybe not using the winch and all that, but like the movement and the look about him, perfect. And, you know, when we will eventually talk about A Night of the Living Dead and, you know, maybe we'll go on to, well, I guess we should go on to Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead. You know, it's kind of a low bar in the 60s through the 80s in portraying zombies.
Yeah.
This is the movie with the best zombies in it to date. To 1985, this is the example. When I think of zombies from a zombie movie, I think I'm thinking of the Tar Man.
Yeah, that is certainly, unexpectedly, that's what made it into like the pop culture zeitgeist, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Dawn of the Dead was the mall movie, right?
Yes.
That's one of the more revered zombie movies, but wow, they were just blue.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, they were blue extras, and they look like blue extras. And granted, the zombies, the big horde of zombies in this movie, had the advantage of being filmed only when it was at night and in the rain.
Yes.
It obscured a lot of bad makeup or whatever.
Yeah, and a lot of them were just wearing their regular clothing and maybe with some like oatmeal makeup.
Probably, yeah. But we didn't care. It's
nope.
Great. It's fine. You know, that's when we talk about Night of the Living Dead. Night of the Living Dead did so much with so little. You know, that's a movie that didn't have, it had maybe, like I said, one scary visual, I think. Period. And everything else is just like stuff you bring your own bags on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
So, or they were packed by George Romero. So, anyway, so was it worth it?
This is absolutely worth it. This was a fun movie.
And it makes you want to see 2 and 3.
It makes me want to see 2.
Okay.
I'm with all judgment for beyond that. There's a fourth one too, right?
Maybe, probably.
Yeah. No, this was interesting. It was a fascinating take on zombies. Really unexpected. This is a really unexpected movie. It's such a fantastic 80s snapshot, not just of like the aesthetic, but just like the whole attitude. Like, I think watching this movie could just tell you so much about 80s culture.
Yeah.
And it moves along. It's longer than I expected it to be, but it didn't feel long.
No, it does. It flies along. And the characters are great. all the character, well, I mean, Freddy is actually probably the, for a leading man, Freddy is kind of a dud for a character, but it's fine. It doesn't hurt anything. He doesn't have any heavy acting to do, really, right? So
most of the characters in this movie, no, I think it's fair. I think most of the characters in this movie are one stereotype or another, but very few of them venture into cliche territory.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, and most of them are like one note, but it's mm-hmm. a note we want. It's a note that we needed to hear. And occasionally you see someone like Frank and Bert and Ernie who really exceed expectations.
I think everybody exceeded expectations. If maybe not exceeded them, at least they subverted them. I mean, you expected suicide to be causing some damage to some zombies. Nope.
Yeah.
You expected skinny tie dude and Molly Ringwald looking chick to maybe hook up or have some sort of romantic resolution. Nope.
Yeah, exactly.
You expected Spider to be one of the first to die because of 80s movies tropes.
Yes.
But nope. You expected Bert to just be kind of like somehow turn into a villain. Nope. You expect Ernie to be definitely Ernie look like he was going to be turning into a weirdo villain. Nope. None of it. You expect Tina to die a horrible death because she's so stupid.
And yet.
Nope.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's this gives you more than you even want, and it's great. I love it. I love this movie.
Even Scuzz. You expect him, he's kind of the tough punk looking dude. You expect him to eventually turn into a coward. Nope.
Nope. All in all, it's pretty great.
Yeah. The thing of everything in this movie that could have bothered me, the thing that bothered me the most, the thing that didn't make any sense to me at all, that I could not get past, was why the Colonel was living in such a huge mansion. With armed guards standing outside his gate.
I think if I was to dare, I know it's like questioning Shakespeare, but if I was to rewrite this or to edit it, I don't think you need the Colonel's character. I just think you need to have that phone call to the military, and some military, maybe even just a voice, says, "We will take care of this. You know, we just stay put. We will take care of it," and then. Flash, boom, everything's gone.
Yeah, but even that, it's actually really interesting that since these things went missing, it's this guy's job is to just wait until they pop up again.
Yeah, yeah, and this is like, what, 15 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Now, I don't know if it's his full-time job or he's on call that week or something, but still. Well, he's got all that set up at home. Must be his job. 1984. Peaceful time in the military, really.
Sort of. It was right in the heart of nuclear proliferation.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you were in Beirut or... Okay, so are we on to housekeeping?
Sure.
Housekeeping. Do you have any housekeeping?
Sorry, one of my neighbors is playing U2 so loudly that I thought we might have had a device on somewhere.
Ah. Well, could be worse.
Yes. Could be the Moody Blues.
You know, Nights in White Satin, it's a great song. Yeah. I mean, it really is a great song. I kind of like The Color in Your Eyes. I wouldn't go see a Moody Blues concert. By the way, the parents, here in a little housekeeping, the parents tomorrow night go to see the Rolling Stones.
Very nice. Hopefully Mick Jagger holds up.
Yeah, he's going to hold up one more day.
Yep, that's it. That's all we want.
Yep.
Because they were supposed to see him in May, I believe.
Yes. And he had to have heart surgery, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. And he's seen, you know, he's got like, they're not all highway miles on that Mick Jagger body.
Definitely not.
So. I guess I don't really have a lot of housekeeping. I mean, we went to Hatcher Pass. When was the last time you went to Hatcher's Pass?
Well, I was in the car with you.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, let me just suggest you go from the Palmer end first. And then go toward Willow. You go to the Palmer end. It is actually smooth sailing all the way up the mountain. And you get to the Independence Mine. It's great. I think we paid $11 to go park up next to the buildings. We could have parked for free, I suppose, or a lot less if we wanted to hoof it up there, but it was worth not having to hoof it up there. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful day. There's some paragliders in the air, which is amazing. And then we took the continued on the pass to Willow. And right there, that's when it turns into a dirt road and it's kind of hairy. And I could definitely see where it was super like foggy and smoky when Jesse and Jason and the parents went there. They decided just to go back to Palmer. That was the right move. Because on a beautiful sunshiny day, it was still like the road felt like a goat trail. And we definitely had to make room when two vehicles wanted to go passing each other in opposite directions.
And is that with the huge like drop off on one side?
Yes and no. Yes, it would have been a huge drop off on a couple different spots, but really it's just narrow roads. You just end up in a ditch for the most part.
Okay.
But yeah, definitely if there was like snow or if it was foggy, you'd be going a lot slower for sure. And it's pretty steep.
That's one of my lasting memories of Hatcher's Pass is driving up in the Bronco, which is a very wide vehicle, and going up a steep hill and just dropping off on the passenger side.
Yeah.
Like there's no guardrails, no anything.
No. It actually has a sign that says primitive roadway next 20 miles.
Yeah. So I didn't want to look out the window because it was making me kind of queasy. And so I was reading one of the comic books I brought along with me, which I believe was when Peter Parker married MJ Watson.
Ah.
Then I got yelled at for reading a comic book instead of enjoying the trip.
Well, being as tolerant a father as I am capable of, we had a little scene when we got out at the Independence Mine. You know, we were going to go walk up to the buildings of the mine. I mean, I didn't have any illusions we were going to hike up the hill all the way to the top where you can. That was not going to happen under any scenario. But the fact that there were like bees flying around, because there's lots of flowers up there.
Yep.
Yeah. My daughter did not want, she wanted to like go back to the car. Like we were still in the parking lot walking. She wanted back to the car. I'm like, no, I don't want to be this dad, but there is no way. And Kelly was like, well, you can go and I'll just stay here with her. I'm like, no, like, I'm not doing this for me. So we made her tough it out through the walking through the flowers, and she got to see some stuff. It was fine. You know, it was cool to see the paragliders. And when we crested the hill and went down the other side, we could see where they were launching off from. And that was pretty cool. We got some like close ups of them, and people were picking berries. It was really cool. But yeah, it comes out on the Willow side right there. It's in your neck of the woods.
Right on.
So, yeah. And then we went to Cold Stone Creamery in Wasilla. And Journey got some ice cream that she did not like, which was like, oh, that's a bummer. Paying like $8 for ice cream that you're not going to eat.
What kind was it?
I think it was
like, I assume she picked it out.
Yeah, it was. She picked out cake batter ice cream. And she didn't like the taste of the cake batter ice cream. So, did I yell and scream? No, no. Did we actually drive to Dairy Queen and get her a blizzard? Yes, we did, because we were on vacation.
Oh, the things we do for our children.
Yeah, yeah. And tomorrow, I think we're going to go to Seward, to the Sea Life Center.
Oh, very cool.
So we'll see how that works out. Yeah, I think that's my news. Anything on your end?
We got a boat.
Ah, I saw it. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's a tiny, tiny little pedal boat.
That's four person, pedal
boat,
right?
Paddle boat?
Both? Pedal paddle?
I mean, it's, you use pedals. I call it a pedal boat. I've heard a lot of people refer to it as a paddle boat.
Yeah, paddle boat's like something you can gamble on, right? In the Mississippi.
Yeah, river boat, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
But yeah, we got it.
It's got a roof. That's awesome.
It's got a little canopy. And you can fold it down if you want. we did not want.
But like four people, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely when there are four of us, it definitely rides low, but
yeah, still
it stays afloat, so that's good.
Yeah. Fun.
And it is slow, but pleasant.
Yeah, so if you're not in a hurry, right? I mean, because, you know, that's the one thing I thought when, like, looking at that lake is that you could drift for quite a while, but it doesn't seem like it would take forever to get back.
They went, my wife and daughter took it out the first time, and my dog freaked out, did not like seeing them go. Yeah. But yeah, they went all the way down to the other end of the lake and back, and it was a good probably hour and a quarter, if not an hour and a half.
Oh, was she feeling it at the end?
Yeah, because I don't think they were intending to be out that long, but so there's like a slight wind on the lake that is towards the other end. So when they were going out, it was a slight tailwind.
Yeah.
But when they're coming back, it was a slight headwind, which, as it turns out, when you're in a little boat like that, makes a huge difference.
That's where the canopy does not help you.
Yeah. So when you're like trucking along, when you're going with the wind, and then you turn around and you're pedaling, and you're like, why are we not moving? this is terrible. So on their way back, they had the headwind, even though the lake looked calm. But yeah, so by the time they came back, it was a little past lunchtime. Everybody was tired and hungry, but they had a great time.
Good. Did you, Joe, at work, I was telling him about your house, and he pulled up like a map of the lake that showed the depths and everything. It's like,
yeah,
this is all, it's like 40 feet in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's a lot. I wouldn't want to dive to the bottom of that.
No, it's really clear. There were people who were practicing scuba diving.
Yeah, you can. On Sunday, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fun. No, okay. No, it would not be fun. It would be convenient if you wanted to scuba dive.
Yes.
Get some hours without actually being in like super silty, ugly, scary Alaska water.
Yeah. Just leechy water.
Yeah, you got your... wear your wetsuit on, right?
You hope. Yeah, so we got a boat. It was fun. Yeah, not much else is going on. We're going out there for a long weekend.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.